Court's ready to hear argument. Mr. Abbott, you look ready to proceed.
I am. Thank you, Your Honor. I may please the court, Richard Abbott, on behalf of Appellant Randall Richardson, who's in the rear of the courtroom here today. This is a case of first impression regarding the 2010 hearing officer statute, which was enacted by the General Assembly as an alternative means of considering disciplinary proceedings against licensees of Delaware boards and commissions. So there is some broad impact regarding many of the issues, although some of the issues are Mr. Richardson specific. The five issues that we've raised: the lack of a penalty hearing transcript or recording. That's the first one. That's more of a technical issue, but it's important because
now, penalty hearing is your phrase. That's not in the statute rules or anywhere else.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, one of the overarching issues, I think, in this case, and perhaps I should have started there, is the need to read the Cosmetology Act, the Hearing Officer Statute, and the Administrative Procedures Act in paramateria. They all address the same disciplinary process, and particularly under the circumstances at issue in this case, which involves a licensed cosmetologist who was also a licensed beauty salon shop owner, and you also have to look at the Administrative Procedures Act. That is incorporated by reference in both the Hearing Officer Statute as well as the Cosmetology Act. So the three component parts have to be brought together as best as possible into one harmonious whole. And so with respect to your point, Justice Ridgely, the penalty hearing, as I called it, is basically the final phase of the process, because the hearing officer can only make a recommendation as to the penalty. The findings of fact are binding, but the penalty ultimately has to be deliberated upon and decided upon by the particular board or commission. So there is an actual process there. We were denied the opportunity to present any input at the penalty hearing phase, and of course it was not recorded.
I must be a little confused on the facts. I thought that there was a transcript of the hearing that took place where you were there and evidence was considered and so forth, and that hearing officer issued a decision of some sort that indicated findings of facts and conclusions as to the appropriate penalty, and that decision was then reviewed by the board, and the board did not have arguments, hearing, anything like that, and simply agreed to impose the sanctions that had been recommended. Is that what happened?
That's generally accurate, Your Honor. However, my point is that the board itself could have changed. They could certainly have disagreed with the penalty. And in order to have, it's our position that under the statutory framework, in order for the person that's charged with a violation to have a fair opportunity to be heard, there has to be an opportunity for presentation of relevant evidence regarding the penalty, because the hearing on the facts is done at the hearing officer stage. But there is still a second component of the hearing, which is effectively the sentencing, shall we say. And my client was denied an opportunity to be heard, and it was not recorded. And as I noted, again, all I can do is make representations as an officer of the court of what I observed, which was that the only materials provided to the board were the hearing officer's recommendation and my written exceptions. They were handed to the board members a few minutes before they voted. My observation was many of those board members didn't even read my exceptions.
Is there a reply to your exceptions, or how does that work? Is it the board hearing officer issues the ruling, and then you are the only one who files a writing in response, or is there an opportunity for rebuttal by the prosecuting authority?
There is a hearing officer recommendation and written exceptions, if any, by the licensee's attorney. That's it. That's the end of the road. And then the deliberations are conducted before the board. And
I understand your position that you should have the opportunity to argue, but why isn't a writing with your exceptions Is there a page limit? Is there anything that would prevent you from putting in writing anything and everything that you would say in person?
No, I would agree with Your Honor. I can certainly, there's no page limit, and so my letter could have included whatever my client wanted to present to the board. The problem is, because there's no transcript, I mean, I think we would make an argument that the board acted arbitrarily and capriciously because it didn't even consider certain documents. It didn't deliberate. It didn't receive any summary by its staff members or by the Deputy Attorney General. And as I say, in fact, the materials were limited because the board, to my knowledge, there was no distribution at the hearing of the transcript of the board hearing before the hearing officer. And so all they got was the recommendation and my exceptions. And then, of course, we didn't really have any opportunity to summarize those. And even if they had given them to the board members in advance and the board members had had a reasonable opportunity to consider them, then, you know, I don't think I would be making this argument. But that was not the case. There is material prejudice to my client because without the record, I can't show this court on review some of the procedural problems with the way that they conducted their penalty phase.
But I thought you started out by acknowledging that the hearing officer's findings were conclusive, that the board was not authorized to make different findings, was it?
Fact findings are conclusive by the hearing officer recommendation. All the hearing officer does with respect to the penalty, however, is make a recommendation or a suggestion. It's advisory only. So the board ultimately is the one that has to decide the penalty. And that's both under, again, reading all the statutes together. You have to read the hearing officer statute as well as the Cosmetology Act, because the Cosmetology Act on its face says the board shall consider these proceedings. And so
you're talking about the hearing officer. Did the board itself ever convene in public where you had an opportunity to stand in front of them?
They convened at what they have called in their briefing a meeting. So they have conceded that it was not a public hearing. And in fact, I specifically rose and asked for an opportunity to address the board, and that was denied.
And so what did they say in public? I know it's not in the record because we don't have a transcript, but did they say, we're going to take this under advisement, or did they all say, we're going to approve the hearing officer's report? What happened?
The president of the board, who's the chair, consistent with her prior statement that we included in our briefing, and I'm paraphrasing, indicated that, in her opinion, if you had an unlicensed person that was leasing space at your beauty salon, that should be cause for automatic suspension. That was her view. That was what I refer to as sort of the hanging judge mentality. The rest of the board, there may have been a few other comments by board members, but there was nothing significant. There was a motion, a second, and a vote to approve.
So I want to make sure I understand. Your position is what you just described should have been transcribed.
Correct.
And in the absence of a transcript of what you just described, there should be a remand.
Correct. And an opportunity for my client to be heard. That's the more substantive component of that argument. The second issue is the board's failure to appoint a hearing officer in writing. And this one, I believe, is fairly straightforward because the hearing officer statute is silent on how this latent position of hearing officer springs into action. There's no reference in that statute to how the hearing officer gets appointed, designated.
How does that affect you or your client?
Well, we believe that the entire process is void ab initio because the hearing officer was never legally authorized to conduct the hearing, and since everything up to today that this whole matter is based upon was the hearing officer's initial proceedings, then therefore the rest falls. The rest of the process
is
falls.
Is there only one hearing officer?
There are at least two. There could be more, Your Honor. We actually appeared before the chief hearing officer, Roger Aiken, and I understood from that hearing that there was at least one hearing officer, not chief hearing officer.
Did you object at the time of the hearing? Because you were there and were able to be heard at the hearing, correct?
Correct. And we did not, because at the time I was not aware that there was no written appointment. It's sort of like if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to hear it, doesn't make any noise. I didn't know that there was a problem. I discovered that later. We did provide that in our exceptions to the board, and so the board had an opportunity to decide that and decided to essentially ignore that argument. The next argument, the third argument, is we believe that the penalty is excessive, and the reason for that, and that it's not based on a winnowing or sifting process. And the reason for that is that we cited at least six mitigating factors, and chief among them are it was my client's first offense in 18 years of licensure. The offense was committed in his capacity as the shop licensee, not cosmetologist licensee. In addition, it was a single offense, only one violation, and under the circumstances, there was no health, safety, or welfare risk because his wife, who was the nail technician, had been in the business for almost two decades, allowed her license to lapse. It wasn't a unlicensed, unexperienced, unskilled person. It was somebody who let their license lapse, and admittedly, it was for a long period of time. So that's why both we recommended or suggested to the hearing officer the penalty of probation and fine. The Attorney General's office, who represented Division of Professional Regulation, did not take any position. And, of course, as the prosecuting authorities had no problem with proceeding as we had proposed. In fact, we had previously attempted to do a consent agreement, but the board rejected it again because the president stated the sanction's not severe enough. Her view was you have an unlicensed person, automatic suspension. A three-month suspension is a very severe penalty. If you look at the progressive regimen of penalties listed in Section 5114, the least severe is a letter of reprimand. The second most severe would be probation. The third most severe would be monetary fine. The fourth would be suspension, and the fifth would be revocation. So they jumped all the way up in this single offense, first offense situation with no health, safety, or welfare problem to level four, shall we say, which is suspension. The reason that that's important is that the hearing officer's recommendation references my recitation of those mitigating factors, but never evaluates them, never weighs them, and in the reasoning simply says, Ms. Richardson was unlicensed for a long period of time. I see no excuse, therefore suspension. So one aggravating factor, no consideration of any mitigating factors. I would respectfully suggest that that's not a winnowing and sifting and weighing process and therefore was arbitrary and capricious. Since the board relied upon that recommendation and the Superior Court affirmed that, we believe that reversal of that penalty is warranted.
What's the effect of the board's order? It was four or five pages long with respect to your needing a record argument.
Well, again, it doesn't show the proceedings. It mainly is because we think we should have had an opportunity to be heard as well, that it should have been a public hearing, but I can't make the argument to this court fully. I mean, I know the court will probably take my word for it to some degree, but typically the case law requires that there be a transcribed record so that this court is capable of reviewing precise pinpoint sites to the record. I suppose if the court takes my word for it.
I want to be sure I understand your position. Is it a transcript was needed because things happened at the hearing or at the board proceeding, meeting, whatever they want to call it, that you did not have the opportunity to address in your exceptions because your exceptions predated that?
Well,
and that if someone was proceeding with a closed mind or had particular bias, that could only be demonstrated through judicial review with a transcript.
In part, that's correct, but mainly it's to the fact, Your Honor, that most of the board members, to my observation, didn't even read the exceptions, so they don't even know what they were. So if we had a transcript, you would see the staff person handing, I'm going to now hand out the recommendation of Mr. Abbott's exceptions. You would see the time frame that elapsed based on the beginning of the transcript and the end of the transcript and some of the points that I've raised in the briefing.
There's no process to give these out in advance of the meeting?
Well, I'm assuming they didn't because they handed them out during the meeting. So I'm assuming they didn't give them an advance package to review before they came to the actual meeting. But by not having it transcribed, we also, as I say, don't have the opportunity to point out my client's lack of any hearing. And under both the Administrative Procedures Act and under the Cosmetology Act, penalty phase is part of the entire process. It starts with the hearing, fact-finding, decision-making, and ultimately the penalty imposition. And that's all part of the hearing, which is required to be public, which is required to be either transcribed or recorded. So it's a direct violation. The fourth issue that we have is the improper suspension of the cosmetology license. Again, that's pretty straightforward. My client was the shop owner, the shop licensee, and what we stipulated to in the facts was that under Section 5118, Mr. Richardson was the shop licensee. And as the shop licensee and owner, he permitted a tenant to operate without a current valid license. So the facts that we conceded, as well as the licensing, warranted, if any suspension, a suspension of the shop license. And the reason that's important is because you don't have to be a cosmetology licensee to have a shop license. I could be a beauty salon owner. So what the division is contending is that if someone, think about this result, which we would suggest would be an absurd result, if a licensee for the shop did not have a cosmetologist license, if you follow the argument of the board, they would say that there's no way that they can penalize that shop owner for allowing an unlicensed person to function in their facility. And that would be absurd. So the point is, the section in 5113.7 clearly states that if you're being charged as an owner.
And what did the Superior Court say on this point?
Superior Court, as to all five issues, effectively said, I've read the statutes, I don't agree with them, in a one or two sentence rationale. All five of my arguments were rejected based on a very brief summary, conclusory statement.
Well, didn't the Superior Court say that the provisions of subchapter 4 of chapter 101, while setting forth a number of provisions regarding granting, revoking, withholding, suspending, or otherwise acting upon licenses, does not set forth a sole and exclusive procedure for discipline concerning licenses? And the definition is broad enough to include the proceedings that took place here.
Well, you're probably right. That's issue 5. So that's a good seg into issue 5. And I would have to concede, Your Honor, that particular reasoning was a little bit more broad than the 1 through 4 reasonings. However, if we take that argument, clearly the hearing officer statute says that the hearing officers may only proceed under APA, or Administrative Procedures Act, subchapter Roman numeral 3. The licensing and suspension, license and licensing suspension provisions of the APA are contained in subchapter Roman numeral 4. So that's the basis for our argument.
Is your argument that the board, regardless of what the hearing officer says, does not have the authority on its own, if it had independently conducted a hearing to suspend the cosmetology license on these facts? Is that your position?
No. The board certainly has the ability to conduct subchapter Roman numeral 4 proceedings. That's expressed in the APA as well as in the Cosmetology Act. So
where is the error if it's the board that actually did it?
Well, and I kind of conceded that in a footnote in my brief, that it could be argued that if the penalty hearing is in fact a part of the overall hearing process, that because the board conducts it, it's not a violation. I'll concede that. But that necessarily, if the court concludes that, then that means that the board erred by not keeping a record, et cetera, as we've indicated in arguments 1 through 4.
And, Mr. Abbott, I stopped the clock because you only have a minute and a half left of your total time. Did you want to reserve that?
I would. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Deputy Attorney General Ed Black. I'm appearing today for the Board of Cosmetology and Barbering of the State of Delaware. An awful lot of this case turns not on arguments about the law so much as it turns on inaccurate facts. The appellant's first argument is that the chief hearing officer wasn't appropriately designated.
Well, wait a second. He started out with the absence of a transcript for the board's hearing absence of an opportunity to be heard.
All right. We can move to that. Delaware Code Section 5105D provides at any hearing where evidence is presented, such hearing shall be recorded by a court reporter, and any stenographic transcript requested shall be at the expense of the party making the request. As counsel has already told Your Honors, there was no hearing before the board. Simply, there was a meeting. There was no new evidence introduced, and therefore, there was no need under 24 Delaware Code 105D for any transcript.
What about the opportunity to be heard?
The position of the board is that there were two opportunities to be heard. One was the hearing before the hearing officer. That's oral. The second was in writing through his exceptions that were presented to the board before the board's meeting at which it adopted the recommendations of the hearing officer.
Well, how does one address then, hypothetically, if there's a member of the board that says, I know this guy from whatever, and anything he does is always in violation of the law, and therefore I want the maximum penalty, and that's my vote. Now, how do you demonstrate on appeal or otherwise, bias or improper decision-making by the board without any record of the proceeding?
That's an excellent question, Your Honor. And I don't mean to sidestep it, but the fact of the matter is that's not what happened here.
Well, according to appellant, that is what happened here, although maybe not in as extreme a version, but that appellant didn't get the opportunity to say, I recognize that the president here has a pretty hard-line view of things, but here's why you should temper your conclusions. There was no chance to ask the board members to not follow what the president's view was, and there was not an opportunity to basically present mitigating evidence. Although you say that they got that in the exceptions, it appears, and we don't know because we've got no record, but it appears that the board didn't have the time or didn't in fact look at the exceptions.
I don't know that to be the case.
Well, none of us do. That's the problem.
That is a problem. I don't know, for example, whether the exceptions were distributed in advance. I know copies were distributed at the meeting. I will take counsel's word for that. But I can't tell the court that there was not, prior to this meeting, an opportunity to deliberate individually.
And, of course, there was nothing said at the hearing to the effect of, now you've all seen and considered the hearing officer's report, recommendations, and the exceptions, and everybody's saying, yes, we've all had a chance to look at that information, and now we're ready to vote.
There is nothing of that sort. All we have to view are the minutes of the meeting, page A97 of the appendix to the opening brief. There's a reference to after review, a motion was made by Ms. Lord. The other thing we have is the four-page order entered by the board.
We have to be concerned about the precedent we set. As I understand it, the board had at least three choices. It could approve what the hearing officer said, it could reject it, or it could modify it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And just by way of analogy, we have situations where criminals are sentenced, and there is a transcript made of the sentencing hearing. Then later, a paper order is issued that the judge signs that is supposed to reflect what was said at the sentencing hearing. To the extent the defendant wants to say, well, that's not what happened, they can go back to the transcript. In the future, depending on the precedent we set here, if the board said it wants to modify the hearing officer's recommendation, and then that's reflected in a written order, unless there's a transcript of what the modification was that can be compared to the written order, how would a person say the modification in the written order is inconsistent with the modification voted on by the board?
Your Honor, with that point, I would agree. But again, that isn't what happened here.
I know, but the question before us is, when the board meets, are they required to make a verbatim transcript? And we know that wasn't done here. Now, there's two separate questions. When you tell us that's not what happened, you may be telling us it's harmless. But we have to construe the statute, and the question before us is, should there have been a verbatim transcript of the board's consideration?
And my response to that would be that if there was anything approaching a hearing at which evidence was introduced, then yes, the transcript is required.
So but in the situation where they modify the hearing officer's report without taking any evidence, they just decide they want to modify it, you're saying there's no need for a transcript?
I would say that in order to modify, there has to be at least some reason stated justifying modification, and it would seem to me that that could be considered evidence.
Well, I guess we're all creatures of the adversarial system we deal with. Normally, when someone's talking about making a decision, we don't consider the comments made by the adjudicatory body to be evidence. You know, we see school board hearings, we see planning and zoning hearings, and when they're talking to each other about a modification, I don't know of any case that considers those conversations evidence. Evidence is presented by the parties. Now, that's certainly a rule we could consider, that conversations by the body that decides are evidence, but at least I don't know of any precedent for that characterization. So let's assume, hypothetically, I'm correct. And it's simply the board sitting there saying, we've all seen the hearing officer's report, and we think it should be modified to a one-month suspension. And everybody says, we agree, it should be a one-month suspension. Then the order comes out, two-month suspension. What happens?
Then I think you have a pretty good argument on appeal to the Superior Court.
Okay, well, we're here, and we've got to construe the statute. And so I go back to my question. Shouldn't the statute be construed to require a verbatim transcript?
And the point I would make, Your Honor, is that perhaps the statute should require a verbatim transcript if the board does anything other than accept the recommendations of the hearing officer.
But then we go back to Justice Ridgely's point, again, making a criminal analogy. If it's sentencing and the judge says anything that evidences a closed mind or reliance on facts that are incorrect, for example, I'm sentencing you to X years because you had a weapon, and that's just wrong. There was no weapon. So if there's either a closed mind or an incorrect factual predicate for the sentence, that can be reviewed because there's a transcript. So at a board hearing, if there's evidence of a closed mind or evidence of a mistake of fact, don't we need a transcript to look into that?
Again, Your Honor, we have a four-page order of the board. If there is a reflection of that, then there's a really good argument on appeal. If the court is asking me whether I think there should be a court reporter at each meeting of every board, on the off chance that there may be some modification of a recommendation of a hearing officer, I'm not prepared to quantify the implications of that sort of ruling.
Well, and the way things work in the family court is there's not a court reporter. They make a tape recording. And if someone wants to get a transcript, they simply arrange for the transcript at their own expense. So I don't think we need to worry about some adverse economic impact.
That, Your Honor, I don't have an issue with tape recordings of board proceedings. I would concede that.
Can we turn for a moment then to the opportunity to be heard? Because again, using Justice Holland's analogy to a sentencing, before a defendant is sentenced, both his counsel and the state make a statement as to why they believe whatever sentence they're looking for is appropriate, and the defendant himself or herself is given an opportunity to speak to the court. And appellant is concerned and arguing that it is interfering with his rights to have the board reach a decision based upon a recommendation of a hearing officer, but reach a decision without allowing the appellant to make an argument as to what an appropriate penalty would be.
And I would repeat what I said earlier, which is that the licensee has two opportunities to argue in favor of mitigation, one before the hearing officer and the other through exceptions. And it appears, from all that appears from the record, the board did consider both the recommendations of the hearing officer and considered
the exceptions.
The exceptions.
And what in the record demonstrates that?
At page A97, this is provision I've already quoted. After review, a motion was made by Ms. Lord, seconded by Ms. Navziger, to approve the recommendations of the hearing officer regarding the disciplinary hearing of Randall Richardson. The motion was unanimously carried. now.
So you're saying because it says after review?
Well, let me continue.
Okay.
At A100 in the order, at its regularly scheduled meeting, this is at the bottom of the page, at its regularly scheduled meeting held on September 26, 2011, the board reviewed and deliberated on the recommendations of Mr. Richardson's exceptions. Pursuant to 29 Del Code 8735T1D, the hearing officer's findings of fact are binding on the board. The board unanimously affirmed the hearing officer's recommended conclusions of law and recommended penalty. Now, if I may, I'd like to go over what was admitted before the hearing officer, because I think that's significance to this case, and I think it's necessary context. In this case, the licensee stipulated a violation of Section 5113A7, and the hearing officer agreed. The evidence of that is at A36, A37, A74, and A81. The licensee, through counsel, repeated the admission of the violation at the hearing before the hearing officer at A52, line 8, A53, lines 1
Excuse
through 4.
Excuse me, I don't think anybody is contesting the finding of a violation.
Okay.
But you seem to be suggesting that since it's admitted that there was a violation, the board shouldn't have to hear from the appellant again asking for consideration of a different penalty.
The opportunity to request a different penalty, first of all, there was an opportunity to request a specific penalty at the hearing, and the licensee took advantage of that. There was another opportunity through the written exceptions, and the licensee took advantage of that.
And that's enough?
I believe so, yes. Notice an opportunity to be heard. And I believe the statute confers
There's no opportunity to be heard by the board other than if we hope that they've actually read the exceptions.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, what are we to do with, because I want to point out one of the, you didn't finish that that paragraph that you read from A100. The last sentence says, in affirming the recommendation, the board weighed and considered the arguments set forth in Mr. Richardson's exceptions.
That's what it says.
Which directly contradicts at least representations that Mr. Abbott has made that they did not read the exceptions.
That's correct.
So how does that get, let's assume that Mr. Abbott produces a series of affidavits of witnesses to show that the board did exactly as he described it, and that statement in the decision is wrong. How do we resolve that without a transcript showing what happened at the, quote, meeting? Or tape.
It would be awfully difficult, Your Honor, and perhaps impossible without going outside the record. Now, obviously, there's access to Superior Court to appeal such a decision and to try to demonstrate taint on the part of the board. How that taint might be demonstrated, there are a number of ways that can be done. A transcript would certainly make it easier. As to the failure to appoint the hearing officer, I would direct the court to Page 825.
Before you go there, let's assume hypothetically that this court decides a transcript is required. We would then, as suggested by Mr. Abbott, remand for further proceedings before the board and basically start over at that point. Is that what would happen?
Well, I would think that the remand, to the extent there would be one, would be for reconsideration with the opportunity to develop a transcript of the board's deliberation. As to a rehearing by the hearing officer, I don't think that is either correct or appropriate given the admissions made by the licensee in this case.
So it would just be a remand to the board?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Black, we've used up all your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to direct the court's attention to Section 10131C of the APA, and I'm going to paraphrase, but it effectively says that the board, whatever board, in this case the Board on Cosmetology, must conduct the hearing on license suspensions. So going back to Justice Ridgely's comments earlier with respect to the Superior Court decision, I would part company with the President Judge because there's a specific statute that says if you're going to address license suspensions, that's a hearing before the board. As I conceded earlier, however, one could argue that there can be a hearing officer proceeding, and then a second phase of the hearing, which is a, quote, hearing, close quote, statutorily, before the board. But Section 10125d of the APA says that some form of record must be kept capable of preparing a verbatim transcript for all hearings. So the APA, which combines with the other two statutory regimens I described, mandates both a transcript as well as a hearing.
But does anything mandate another opportunity to be heard? If the board is getting the benefit of a written decision from a hearing officer and your written exceptions, I understand the argument about who knows whether they read either or both of those documents, but where is it that the board has to conduct another hearing of any sort to before considering what to do?
I would concede the only way you get to that point, Your Honor, where we start from scratch, is if the court agrees that the hearing officer must be appointed affirmatively in writing as the subordinate of the board, which is what the APA says, at least, has to happen. Therefore, the process was invalid. It should start anew.
Well, can't the board ratify that? Somebody say, oops, we forgot that piece of paper, but everybody agrees that the chief hearing officer was the proper person to do this hearing, correct? They all agree?
Ratification I hadn't thought of, Your Honor, I suppose, but I'm not sure that the statutory framework permits that because it has
Didn't they, by accepting the hearing officer's recommendations, effectively ratify his appointment?
I don't know, Your Honor, because they didn't address that argument as far as well, they did address it in their decision, now that I recall.
Sorry, I know your time is up,
yes.
But I didn't get an answer to my last question.
I'm sorry,
Your Honor. My last question was, what authority says that the board is required to do more than review the hearing officer's decision and recommendation, your exceptions, and then decide on a result? You're saying that you didn't get the opportunity to be there to present whatever you want, arguments, to be heard. What gives you that right to be heard at that level?
APA Section 10131C.
Which says what?
Which says, among other things, that if there's going to be a license suspension, that notice, a hearing, and a hearing have to be conducted by the state board, whatever state board it might be. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank you both. We'll take the matter under advisement and we'll adjourn.